Hey everybody, happy October, and welcome to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Brownlee, and if I sound tired, that's because you're just at the massacre. 24 hours of horror. Welcome to the 2012 installment of our Massacre podcast. With me, as always, for this very special show is JB.
I'm doing an instant voice analysis of your voice, Patrick Brownlee, and you're not nearly as tired as last year.
Okay.
You're more tired than the year before.
All right.
You're right in the middle.
All right. Interesting. I'm joined for the first time for this very special Massacre podcast by Doug.
What?
Who went to his first massacre this year.
Hi, Louie, everyone.
You have, nice. You have a massacre cherry all over your legs.
It's crazy. It's grody. A big, grossy, like grody
man. He did it, ladies and gentlemen. All 24 hours. He is a better man than I, Gunga Dean.
I want to clarify something. All, like, 25 hours.
Yeah, good point. Man. We're also joined by a super special guest, JB's spectacular and badass wife, Jan, who also did all 25 hours of the massacre.
Yeah, first time podcaster. Repeat massacre.
But first time all the way
long
through.
Long time listener.
Yep. Long time
wife. Also.
Repeat murderer.
Really.
Yeah, that's different from the massacre.
So we're going to talk about the massacre, but I got to say, you can find our website at fthismovie.net and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie and email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Normally at this point in the show, because it's Scary Movie Month and we hope you are all participating in the Scary Movie Challenge, we would sit here and read a bunch of 7-word reviews for scary movies. However, we just sat in a theater for 25 hours, and we're not going to do that. We're just going to get right to talking about the massacre. So keep submitting your reviews, and we promise to read them on future episodes this Scary Movie Month.
Which is quickly wrapping up.
It really is. Yeah, we only have about 10 days left.
Yeah, 10 or yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I think we were in a theater for 5 of those days. I think.
And if where you live is anything like where we live, there is too much scheduled in the next 10 days.
You're absolutely
you can't
right.
possibly do it
too
all.
Too much good stuff.
Do we want to just spend a minute on the soap opera of the massacre?
Yeah. I defer to you, sir.
Now that both shows are over, the massacre used to be at the Music Box Theater in Chicago, what used to be the happiest place on earth. But for some reason, and I don't know what it is,
it's still a really happy place.
The Music Box and the organizer of the massacre parted ways, and so the massacre did their own show this year, which we did not attend.
The Music Box did their own show.
Right, and changed the name to the Music Box of Horrors. I heard it was well attended, and longtime listener Adam Risky said it was good, and we instead chose to go to the massacre, which is now simply the massacre, which was held at the Portage Theater, which is also in Chicago.
Yes.
Didn't I hear also that the Music Box of Horrors, not to just add insult to injury, but the lineup was not that great?
I didn't love the lineup, but my mind was made up very early on that I would be supporting the official massacre and not the Music Box of Horrors. But no, I was not impressed by the lineup. I thought the massacre had a much better lineup.
Interestingly enough, when the Music Box first announced, you know, the lineup isn't complete. They say these films and several others. And when they first announced, it was the most god-awful thing.
They added some
on Earth.
Good
and at
stuff.
The last minute, like in the ninth hour, an Invisible Man.
And Mark of the Vampire, right?
Yeah.
They added a few things that would be worth seeing. But
because it was funny because you said, like, I chose The Massacre because The Massacre had better movies. I want to clarify. You didn't say better. You didn't say shorter. You didn't say.
I did not say shorter.
Like it.
So I was at the Portage for the first time, which is I think a bigger theater,
much bigger,
which was nice because it felt like we had room to stretch out a little bit. We were not all on top of one another. Doug and I were on top of one another.
We chose to be on top of one another.
That's disgusting and alluring.
That's something we've come to ignore.
And the Portage, you know, did a great job. There were a few projection issues. I don't want to dwell on those, but one movie started and stopped many, many times. Things improved after that.
That specific movie, too, was, it felt to me like the longest movie anyway. So with the breakups, it was like, well, this is taking up an entire 24 hours.
It was almost worth it because apparently on one of the projectors, most of you know when you see a movie old school, they're flipping back and forth between two projectors every 20 minutes. One of the projectors broke down. It was a belt issue. They put out a call to the finest projectionist in Illinois, and his name is James Bond.
Is that
his
for
real name?
That's, okay.
That's his real name, because every year at Ebert Fest, Roger Ebert's very proud that that's who's in the projection booth, because sitting through the massacre, I was reminded of, I think, the 12 years that I've gone to Ebertfest. There has never, ever, once been a single projection problem at Ebertfest.
Wow. Yeah, when they started up Spider Baby had a great new print, and there weren't, I don't think there were any mistakes. There might have been one. I don't know. I don't think there were any mistakes. And at one point, Doug and I commented to one another, like, oh, that's James Bond. And then we, of course, had to launch into our Spider Baby voice.
I thought Spider Baby only came once a year.
So thank you to everybody at The Portage for hosting The Massacre. I will lead off. We'll talk about all the movies in order now. But I will lead off by saying my apologies to Doug, who did a great job, stayed all the way through. Aside from the extra 45 minutes that was tacked on to the end, because there was a lot of stuff packed into this. There were 13 movies, there were trailers, there were short films, there was a weird burlesque thing that went on for a long time.
There were two types of trailers, too. There were legit trailers for horror movies, and there was a
local filmmaker trailers.
And you could vote on things with audience applause, and it was fine, but at the same time you're realizing, oh, it's midnight, and we're already behind the ball.
Right.
So
the most off-the-wall thing was that, well, I think it was 10 minutes. It felt like a half an hour of bad strippers from the early 50s who never really took their clothes off.
You didn't like Valda?
Exotic
Beauty? Or Belle Blondel?
There were Q&As also. Linnea Quigley was there and Jack Hill was there. So there was a lot of stuff packed in and the thing kind of ran long. But aside from running 45 minutes over so we could sit through every perfect minute of Halloween 2, this just felt like the longest massacre I've ever been to. And again, I've only been going to the whole thing since we started doing the podcast. So this was my third year attending all 24
hours.
Time
out. How many times have you been to the Music Box Massacre?
Like seven, maybe? Altogether?
Yeah. And you would leave when? Like what? Give me a...
Anywhere between halfway and two-thirds through.
And would you ever come back?
I never did, no.
JB always used to come back no matter what. Yeah. Even before a podcast.
Most years I would come back for the last film or two.
Okay. So usually I would stay about half or two thirds. And then when we started the podcast, I said, no, I got to stay the whole time. And every year I regret that decision.
So the question becomes, was the lineup of films this year, did that contribute to what you're talking about? Or are we at the point now where we've done it so many times that starts to affect how
I definitely think it's some of both.
Let me jump in there. I've never done it before. It might have been the lineup for me, at least.
I think a lot of it was the lineup.
And we were just saying before we started recording, I think most of the movies were, again, I always appreciate everything that he picks to show, even if I don't necessarily like something. I'm appreciative of the opportunity to have seen it. I think most of the movies on this year's lineup were decent to good, like stuff I genuinely like to stuff that I think is okay. I just think there were so many of a similar kind of movie that they all had a very specific pace.
Which is interesting because I think that
if
that similar kind was something we totally dug, if we really, really liked it, we'd be all for it. But the similar kind, I don't know, I don't want to shoehorn it or pigeonhole it in this thing, but it felt to me like it was not very funny.
No, not a lot of like serious fun.
Yeah, it was just
here's the
word. If there was a bunch of fun stuff, it would be different.
I think you've hit it on the nose because I think my favorite part.
Thank you. I'm done.
Was Return of the Living Dead because it's audience friendly. It's very fast. It's very jokey.
Yeah.
But the more I watched, especially the stuff before midnight, he showed a lot of films that were slow and dreamlike. Because I remember the first time I saw Prince of Darkness, and that worked because you're in a theater for 2 hours and they can establish that mood. But you show six of those in a row,
right?
And you're going to end up catatonic.
And then you show Prince of Darkness. I want to say it started at, what's the,
like 5 a.m.?
It started around 6 a.m.
Tuesday, and I think it ended on
Prince of Darkness is not the film to show at 5 a.m., although my guess is it started at 6 a.m. That's why I got this out so we could put it in the lineup.
Yeah. So it started at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I think that's the one I really kind of like, you know what, I have to embrace. I fell asleep a little bit. I think total for the whole 25 hours, I was asleep for maybe a half an hour.
That's pretty good.
So I would do like a 5 minute cat nap, a black cat nap.
There was a dude that fell asleep. Was
different types of cat naps is my point.
Or was it the second movie? Was it Curse of the Werewolf?
I want to say it was the first. Yeah. Well, no, it was.
Because I would even argue that
where the theater was just filled with snoring people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the second movie.
Yeah.
There was a lot of snoring by us during Black Cat, and I just assumed...
Well,
Black
you
Cat.
Held it against okay. you.
I just assumed 30s, black and white, that's what you're going to have to deal with. But
I thought that movie was a lot of fun. I
want to talk about that in just a second. Curse of the Werewolf, I think, starts that trend.
Yes.
Because I still remember watching that movie on the 3:30 movie, and you go forever until you get the werewolf.
The joke I was asking Patrick, because I'm not as familiar with Hammer horror as everyone else on the
podcast.
Or
Hammer, MC.
Right. Thank
Which
you.
I'm pretty familiar
or
with.
Hammer is a murder tool. Like
too, so. Yeah, yeah.
There's a good hour before the werewolf shows up.
But I was saying, Patrick,
possibly more.
It's funny.
10 minutes at the end.
There's also a thing where it's not just an hour before the werewolf comes. It's also maybe I don't want to be
15
exaggerating.
Minutes?
15-minute prologue, which is
the
most interesting.
Before Leon, who grows up to be Oliver Reed, who grows up to be the werewolf, is even born.
Right. And the prologue is kind of interesting.
It's the best stuff in the movie because you have that ridiculous king character.
Right. And the buxom... Like,
might as well be Mr. Burns. He was so over the top, but he's very entertaining.
So this happens. And even to really hammer the point home that it's a hammer horror, no, that it's a prologue, there's voiceover. And then all of a sudden, after 50 minutes, the voiceover just goes away.
Yeah. And what I always compare that to is if you ask some people what time it is, they tell you how to make a watch. So this is a movie about a kid who grows up to be a werewolf. Well, where should we start? His mother being raped.
No. I think that's too soon.
No,
let's go back to the beggar.
That's
who
I mean it's
her?
No. It was the beggar that like goes into a bar and it says, I need money, and they're like, oh, go to the castle. By the way, that was 5 minutes of him.
I wanted
bar.
To see how the beggar got to that state in his life.
Right, like what did he
where he's forced out of a job.
Because the other weird thing is in the middle of Curse of the Werewolf, sorry we're not going in order, there's this drunk guy who wants free drinks in the bar, and he has figured it out, and he's shambling about, and he's like, he's wearing a very big green coat, and the print was great, the colors popped, and it's a werewolf, I'm telling you, give me another free drink, and it's a werewolf, and then later, he's Leon's cellmate.
Yeah.
What the hell was that?
Can I be honest with you? Right
conservation
now?
Of characters?
You just described a scene I have no...
We might
zero
have gone
memory.
Out. We might have gone out to the lobby. We were trying to shoot some video
and
throughout this.
Part of it, too, is not only so much that we're going to the lobby to shoot video, but also because there were a couple breaks, and that was like the chance to stretch your legs and maybe like, okay, now we're going to go and miss maybe 4 minutes of it. But I really don't. Even if I was there, I'm going to throw this out there right now. That was my least favorite movie of the entire run.
Which is fascinating, because we'll get... There were movies that I had a much harder time with.
I missed my son asking Jack Hill a question, and apparently the answer being pretty damn funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I tell the story?
Yeah.
Because I was there. I think Jan was there also. It was a Q&A, and Q&As are sometimes always awkward, especially in like a dark theater with a microphone that half works. And Jack Hill seems like a very polite, nice man, but you can kind of tell that the douchebag MC up there, I'm sorry, the person who's not me, so I have an issue with everything he says, MC is kind of like asking the wrong questions and being very, I don't know, whatever. So the questions are flying out, and then they kind of dry up, and there's a pause, and then Jake, your son, awesomely raises his hand and stands up and says, the question was something to the effect of, where'd you get the inspiration, how'd you write this movie? And Jack Hill, again, a genial older man, it instantly goes, and he puts his thumb and his forefinger to his mouth.
The universal symbol.
Yeah, for smoking weed, and he just does this, and then he was like, oh, no, I was one of those dreamlike states. Pause, more smoking the weed. I mean, he did it 3 times. It was pretty hilarious.
I have a quick celebrity encounter story, and then we'll go back and we'll go through the movies in order. I was out in the lobby, maybe getting a poster or something, and I happened to walk by Rusty helping to teach. I heard Rusty singing Werewolf Bar Mitzvah from 30 Rock.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
So I jumped in and sang it with him, and then I realized that we were teaching Linnea Quigley how to sing Werewolf Bar Mitzvah.
That's why she sang it.
Which didn't go over at all, but I had a hand in teaching her.
Nice.
She didn't get it right. It took her 3 tries.
It's funny, though, that like Rusty is the kind of guy that wants to teach her that. You are the kind of guy like, I know this is hilarious. I'm going to jump in and not even realize it. Oh, it's for the purpose of teaching a very sweet actress who will do probably anything.
She couldn't get the boy to man part right.
How did Rusty know you had that skill set?
I just was walking by, and I just...
And then she got up on stage for her Q&A, and she got it wrong three times. But the third time was the charm for Linnea.
Is that where that comes from?
I think it was actually coined last night, which was 3 weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, considering how long this
So lasts. The first movie, you know, the first movie at the Massacre traditionally has been a silent film with live organ accompaniment.
Yes.
However, the well has run dry, apparently, on silent horror that is popular.
It hasn't in some... It hasn't.
Right.
In some people's minds,
right.
It has.
Well, because we've gotten to, like, the Gollum and Waxworks and the Hunchback, which wasn't good. So instead, this year, he showed Un Chien Andalou, which I had never seen.
Right.
And now I have seen, and I couldn't tell you one thing about.
I'll say this. I know you're not a fan. In fact, we talked before about the lineup, and you said who is it? Louis Buñuel? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Buñuel, sorry. And Salvador Dali. And I remember in one of my junior high classes, a teacher showing us some scenes, and I was affected by it. I'm like, man, I really want to see it. Also, because of the Pixie song Debaser, where Frank Black is singing, I am Un Chien Andalusia.
Yeah.
Want to grow up. Bear with me.
Slicing up eyeballs.
Slicing up eyeballs, yeah. I want you to know. Yeah. So, but here's the thing. I was kind of looking forward to it. And now that I've seen it, I'm kind of like, that's checked off the list.
I feel the same way.
It's a very famous film. I actually think the organ guy did a good job, although the beginning of our print had all of these disclaimers about how the music was this, and it was approved by Buñuel. And I'm watching this. This has music on it. And I'm like, is the organ guy playing what's on the soundtrack? It was a horrible-looking print.
There was also a copyright 1960 that went along with those...
I knew we were in trouble. The opening logo was Films, Inc., famously. That's where, like, every high school teacher used to rent 16mm films from in the 60s and 70s. But what we were looking at looked like a dupe. Like, someone spirited away a Films, Inc. print and made their own copy.
I knew we were in trouble when I saw a lot of new CGI characters. Inserted, little droids falling
down.
Yeah,
when the Andalusian dog was like, these are people going to get my eyeball sliced?
Yes.
If you can't tell whether the rotting corpse in your piano is a cow or a horse, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, it just was a rotting thing.
Yeah.
It could have been a foot.
The one thing I liked was, if you watch the short film, and I have a feeling it's on YouTube or someplace, they used to sell it on a DVD with other surrealist films, and it was incredibly expensive. I never bought it. It was like,
Like something I never want to see.
I thought a lot of David Lynch... You could see
the
germination, if you will, of David Lynch in that film.
Talking about Prince real quick, though. Again, with the exception of a few...
Like Purple Rain?
That's exactly what I just said.
No, you guys, the Batman soundtrack. that print wasn't great, and there were some projector issues. A belt broke, and things stopped and started a couple times. But I thought, on the whole, every print was fantastic this year.
The print of Curse of the Werewolf, and this is a film I have seen many, many times, is one of the best-looking theatrical prints from that era I've ever seen.
Think about...
The color was so saturated.
Think about the print we saw of Halloween last year. It was, like, pink and terrible, and then think of the print we saw of Halloween 2 today. So many of them look new. I actually thought Nightmare on Elm Street 3 was probably the worst, and it was totally fine. Like, there were scratches and stuff,
the
but
print,
it was fine.
There was something wrong
was
with
really
the...
good, too, I thought.
Which one?
Frenzy.
Yeah, no, I really thought everything looked really good.
And someone made mention that we were looking at a print of Spider Baby that had only ever been run through a projector one at a time. And Jack Hill said, I don't know if you're used to seeing a black and white print that's this fresh. Man, was it good looking.
Yeah.
There was something wrong, though, with the Halloween 2 print, because I think they doubled every frame. Because it was like there was another chase, and then there was like... Then a pause, and then the guy slipped in the blood, and it's like he laid there for, honestly, 18 seconds.
All right, we'll get to Halloween 2. So after Un Chien Andalou is the Black Cat.
Which has actually been shown before at a massacre.
It has?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was confusing it with the Raven, which they showed last year or the year before.
Right, but the Black Cat has been shown, and again, I think we've discussed this somewhere. When Lugosi comes up, there are people who find his performances risible now. And watching The Black Cat, what was that, 2 weeks ago when we were at the Portage? I'm awestruck. I'm fascinated by his performances. they're so over the top. It's well,
every time
it's like he's going to explode.
You have a movie with Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff in the same movie, and so anytime either of them is on screen is great. When they're both on screen, it's super great. The only issue with The Black Cat, and I liked the movie, is that it spends a lot of time, as a lot of movies of the era did, on the young lovers,
yes,
who are not interesting.
And that's David Manners, by the way, who has the same role in Dracula.
Right.
And I almost wish that Rusty had got a print of the trailer, because the trailer for The Black Cat is kind of famous, because remember when they play chess for The Lives of the Girl? The day they shot that, they shot an extra little bit just for the trailer. And it's the two of them over the chessboard, and it's silent for a while, and then Boris Karloff says, "It's your move, Dracula." And then Bela Lugosi says, "Okay, Frankenstein." And then
Karloff says, "Frankenstein's monster."
And then they start laughing, and they're like,
We're embarrassed.
We're playing chess. We're playing chess to see who will be the grand marshal of the filmmaker's frolic or something. And it was like a promotional film.
Yeah, right.
And it's so great to see them like do this.
That's not how they decide grand marshal.
I almost wish he had gotten Twist a copy of that and shown it before.
Yeah.
The main feature. The other thing I thought about The Black Cat this time that I didn't think last time is it's so obvious that even with the studio watering it down, that film was made pre-code.
Holy cow.
Because the shit that's going on in that film, you slept with his wife and then married his daughter, and the daughter's in your bed, and you keep them in a glass case, and I'm going to skin you alive.
Yeah. That jumped out at me. I remember reading about that long before I ever saw The Black Cat, was reading about how controversial it was and how they kind of cut around Boris Karloff being skinned alive at the end of the movie. But I really liked seeing I think it was last year that they showed The Raven. And
not the Vincent Price Raven.
No.
Okay.
Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff again. And their roles are kind of flipped in that movie.
Yeah.
And it was neat to see Bela Lugosi kind of play the hero. I mean, he's still a dark character.
He's crazy nuts with revenge, but he's our good guy.
He is. So that was kind of neat.
I never saw that before. I liked it a lot. I liked seeing them on screen, much like I liked seeing in Heat when you saw...
Well, in Black Cat, the chess scene is the diner scene in Heat.
Or in Caddyshack, where it's like, let's just put these two creative minds in the same room, and it'll be the worst scene in the movie.
Oh, I like that scene.
The Chevy Chase.
Oh yeah, I like that scene.
I've never been a huge fan of it.
They improvised it.
Right,
it wasn't in the script.
That's probably
why. Did they show that at the massacre?
Yes,
they did.
It was Caddyshack 2.
No wonder.
Way more.
That's the horror.
Caddyshack 2 was so bad they should show it at the
back
massacre.
To the shack. What was after Black Cat?
I have that right here.
I think it was Curse of the Werewolf, right?
Yes.
Okay, now you guys are on Team Curse of the Werewolf, right?
We are on Team.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead and talk about that for a minute.
It takes forever to get started.
Yeah,
I agree.
I like the end so much. I like the whole thing that if you have the true love of a woman, that can...
Yeah, that's what
you
I
don't
said.
See that in other...
I also liked seeing a child werewolf.
Sure.
There's just something...
Rarely, unless
you
count Eddie Munster.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I don't.
It's not great. But yeah, you said something yesterday about the end of the movie, how dark it is.
Yeah, because it really sets it up to address what you're expecting from a movie of that era, especially one with such bright colors, is that they promise you that this is how he's going to be redeemed. And then at the end they say, well, fuck that. And his own father, who worked so hard to keep him from being a werewolf, is going to be the one who has to kill him.
And I was watching
spoilers
that.
For Curse of the Werewolf.
It's not called Survival of the Werewolf.
I was watching that yesterday, or 3 weeks
Infanticide
ago.
Infanticide of the Werewolf.
Not quite sure. And it impressed me how much Landis stuck to the blueprint, and how disappointed people were with the end of American Werewolf in London, too.
Yeah.
When that was first released, people were like, what now?
Yeah. I actually thought American Werewolf in London owes a lot to Curse of the Werewolf.
What is the werewolf movie they're thinking of where the guy survives, though? Where he's cured of
lycanthropy? That's no werewolf movie.
Right.
But that's us wanting a Hollywood ending and forgetting that the werewolf tale is a tragedy.
Right. I mean,
there's no way this
ends well. He's never going to survive. Right.
It takes forever to get started. I think maybe I'm channeling the fact that when I first watched it, I was maybe 7, and it was on the 3:30 movie. And the 3:30 movie used to shoehorn a full-length Hollywood film from 3:30 to 5, because at 5 o'clock mm-hmm. the news was on.
Including commercials.
Minus commercials.
Well, that's so the way to see Curse of the Werewolf.
The boring stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, when you were a kid, you didn't really want to see a lot of the werewolf, because you were honestly frightened of it.
Yeah.
So the fact that even the part at the end, I think they're pretty cagey about showing it to you too much.
Sure.
Because I actually think the makeup is aces. I mean, it's a really cool-looking werewolf.
It's different from other werewolves. My feeling, and I only recently saw it probably 4 years ago for the first time, and it was another one of those that I've been aware of the makeup my whole life from those books I used mm-hmm. to read.
We know you love werewolves.
I'm a werewolf guy.
He had a werewolf bar mitzvah.
I saw it a couple years ago. My feelings about it this time were the same. It's very well made. The production design is fantastic. The costuming is great. I love that whole Hammer style. I like the colors. I like, Doug, you mentioned the sound. Like, I hate this. You said you didn't even like the sound of it.
No.
And I do. I
hate it.
I like that. I don't know why. But it's just, it's not a werewolf movie. Like, it's just so slow.
It's a costume drama with the werewolf yeah. thrown at the end.
And now, Oliver Reed is really over the top.
Yeah.
I kept expecting him to break into song, though.
He's really,
no,
that scene he's, where he's like, I love you, why don't you marry me, or whatever. I mean,
no,
it's like, we got to laugh in the trailer, and then again in the
movie.
The
one where she comes down and he starts shouting to get away.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, Oliver, he's in a different movie.
Yeah.
The way you described the movie in terms of, I you love the ending, it's this tragic, you think it's going to work out, how it actually goes down is tragic and beautiful in a way.
But no, if you, I don't know about beautiful.
If you described that to me, though, I'd be all for that movie. I just felt this movie. I mean, again, I don't want to beat a dead horse. It was so
always good about doing that, like describing the movie
that should be on screen
or that she sees that none of us see.
Yeah, well, but again, not to beat a dead horse, but it is
a special gift.
It's probably not even. It's probably a little over 2 hours.
I don't think it is.
No.
Are you kidding me?
It might be 90 minutes. It was probably over 2 hours for us because of all. This was the movie that had all the breaks.
I love it. I'll admit what everything you're saying is true.
Yeah. But I'll disagree. You'll disagree with me right now in saying, like, I don't like the color and the sound of that era of movies.
Era.
It's very kind of, everything is very bright. Everything is,
era.
Even like when they're in a workshop and at night with the candle, it's still like, it's still so bright. And I just can't, and then the sound is like this tinny, and I know it's also the Portage's sound system.
But all the Foley that they added later, like Here Comes the Carriage,
yeah.
was always overdone in those films.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like, carriage!
I think, honestly, and this might, I'm going to lose, I have no respect out there regardless, but I might lose more, whatever respect I have. I might not be a Hammer guy, because I've seen a couple, and I'm like, in fact, this morning, yesterday, last week, before the massacre, Shadia, my wife put on Return of the
Frankenstein.
Is that a Hammer movie?
Was it Return of Frankenstein or Return of the Frankenstein?
Was it from Turner Classic Movies the other night?
I'm not sure what it was on.
It might have been on AMC.
It was British. It was the same colors and it was the same sound. And I'm like,
was this Wednesday night?
No, it was yesterday morning before the massacre.
Okay, because every Wednesday in October, Turner Classic Movies is showing horror movies at night.
Yeah.
And last Wednesday was Horror of Dracula, Curse of Frankenstein, The Reptile. Those.
And again, this might be a bad example because I'm not sure what the movie was, but to me it felt the same as what I've been told that Hammer Horror is. It's the remakes and stuff.
Well, you're catching Hammer Horror at its classy point.
I wanted
it to be there last
point.
Year when they showed The Vampire Lovers, right? When they'd given up all semblance of taste.
The Hammer starts out wonderfully, and I love those films, but and then it becomes lots more nudity, and then in the final stages, the seven golden vampires meet. They start.
It's like a kung fu Dracula movie.
It's a kung fu Dracula movie. And at a convention once, someone asked Peter Cushing, "How could you have appeared in this?" And he was like, "Oh no, my dear, I wasn't there the day they filmed that." But I think Doug is putting his finger on something interesting. I think now,
it's Patrick.
We might be looking at a situation where people in 2012 have more patience and willingness to try and maybe more love for the Universal horror films in the 30s than for the Hammer films in the 50s and 60s. Because to modern audiences, the Hammer films are too slow.
Yeah.
And I think once you say 30s, black and white, Karloff, people are maybe more willing to.
Sure.
I don't know. The Hammer films are slow, but I've always thought that was one
of
their...
No, it's just a purely subjective personal choice. Like, I just have never really dug on costume drama. I don't know why this movie takes place in Spain. It's just because it's pretty or whatever.
Because Oliver Reed is a Spaniard.
Well, it takes place in Spain, and they all have English accents
right, and,
with Spanish names.
And again, I get that some... I've never had
Don Fernando? Are you Don Fernando?
I've never had the...
I've
never had the mindset where I watch something kind of like immerse myself in the pageantry of it. I've just never had that kind of imagination. So that might be part of it,
Speaking
too.
Speaking of costume dramas, let's flip the coin now.
Yeah.
The next film is Witchfinder General.
I kind of liked it, actually.
Which you two said that you liked.
Yeah.
I had never seen it before.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Really?
I didn't like it at all.
Oh, I liked it a lot.
I thought it was slow. I thought it was slower than Curse of the Werewolf.
You're crazy.
And I thought it was so simplistic.
Yeah. Nah, I didn't see it that way.
I need you three to tell me what you liked about it.
Horses. Girls like horses.
But that was another thing. How many endless shots of people on horseback were there?
And a lot of the plot
reminded
dealt
me of
with
Krull.
Where can we get horses? Yeah. How many horses do you have? That's
I get it.
Horse.
You have to traverse a long distance, and you're going to need a horse. I get it.
But
how many shots are there? Where
but
people
there was
just
a, there was a
horses?
Scene that dealt with the horses that I actually kind of liked, where the army comes in and basically says, like, yeah, we're just going to take those. And suddenly they're sort of being compared with these assholes who are, you know, quote unquote, working for the church. It's just that both sides are horrible and taking whatever they want and doing whatever they want, which I thought was interesting. I really like the Vincent Price performance. We're so used to seeing him be campy in like a fun way. Like, I'm Vincent Price. I'm in on the joke. Can you do it as Vincent Price, please?
Sure. Yeah. I'm your performing monkey now.
Quote the Raven, nevermore.
There we go. Thank you. And in this, there's no winking. It's just dark and horrible. And the point that the movie gets to at the end is really, really dark. It's almost like Texas Chainsaw Massacre dark. Everybody's crazy by the end.
Can I say this?
Yes, you can.
I really liked how when, what's her boyfriend's name?
Mm-hmm.
When the
Captain Jack.
When the boyfriend comes back from, okay, she's.
He was Matt.
She's
Matthew.
Raped and gives herself up to try to save her father figure.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I know. And so all these terrible, defiling things happen to her. He comes back, and you're expecting him to reject her.
Right.
It's really set up, and he doesn't.
No.
And instead, he kneels in front of an altar and basically marries her.
Yeah, and then he's like, I'm going to kill that guy.
But
and
John spends the rest of the movie trying to kill that guy. JB, to your point, when... After watching The Curse of the Werewolf, when the movie first started and it was talking, there was a prologue about royalists and the Cromwell supporters. I looked at Patrick and I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
No, but...
Because there was a prologue, I had no idea what was happening, and they were on horseback and it was like, something was in the brush and they get out. I'm like, what is going on? I hate this.
You can pick it up as it goes along. I will say that what you guys are saying gets to the only thing I liked.
The political subtext. I'm not
absolutely.
Joking.
No. Yeah. The non-ironic darkness of it, that it was willing to be very mean-spirited for a very specific political point and not smirking.
Yes.
Yes.
It's on Netflix Instant if anybody's listening to us talk about it, possibly ruin it and wants to watch it. But real quick, it's also worth reading into a little bit. I don't remember all the facts, but the director only made a couple of movies. He was sort of this very contentious guy. He and Vincent Price hated one another.
Yeah.
It was a very difficult shoot.
I was just going to say, again, to JB's point, it is a little long. It is a little chasey, which I have an issue with. In fact, a quick side note, I watched Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is a great, brilliant movie. Except it kind of goes off the rails at the end, for me at least, when it's just like running from building to
chasing
building.
Chasing is rarely interesting.
It's so like, I get it.
There's so much in the last 25 hours.
But I love there's a scene, this is not, Jen pretty much spoiled everything, so I'm not spoiling anything new.
Yes!
But there's a scene where he's going to avenge his new wife's father, and he goes, and he's like, he's kicking ass, and he's like, this is his mission. And it's like, it's awesome. I'm like, yes, it's like doing what he's not a puss, he's like, he's doing it, you know, so I like that.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of the movie. But again, to your point, it was another of the same kind of movie.
It just
were
worked
just
better.
So
and after
many
Curse of the Werewolf,
yes,
you might not want to show
Witchfinder
General.
Right,
because I was expecting a hospital procedural.
Because so. You're right. But to like what you said earlier.
I'm promoted to Witchfinder General, Captain.
You had asked.
Oh, excellent.
You had asked earlier. Was that an Egghead reference?
Yeah.
That's outstanding. when you had asked earlier, like, that was the wrong time to show Prince of Darkness. And we'll get to Prince of Darkness, but as I think about this group of movies, there's no right time to show Prince of Darkness. There really isn't. You know what I mean? Because it's still going to butt up against something that's too much like Prince of Darkness.
I liked what he said, too, that, like, when you see it, when you first saw it in the theater, it was by itself. You are sucked into this dreamlike, very deliberate plotting. Like, right. And in the middle, at 6 o'clock in the morning, when you're up for, at that point, almost at 22 hours, like, for me at least.
I've never programmed a 24-hour horror movie festival, but my...
you should post a comment on the
my inclination would website. Be that if you are going to show Prince of Darkness, it has to be second.
Yeah, maybe. That,
yeah. But even then...
I subscribe to the mixtape theory, which is like you start here, you got to bring it up here, then it's okay to take it down.
Yeah, and then build back up.
Right.
And then big
So
finish.
Prince of Darkness has to go third, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Then there was a short by David Cronenberg that I missed because I wanted some oxygen. Jake said it was short nonsense about two people in a tub.
I'm sorry that
I did not
see it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I missed it too.
Brilliant, I believe is the word you're looking for.
Which brings us to Spider Baby.
Spider Baby was this year's Bucket of Blood.
Yeah.
Where it's like, holy cow, this is a pleasant surprise that plays really great with the entire audience. It seemed like everybody really got a kick out of Spider Baby, not just because Jack Hill was in attendance.
Right.
I had no idea what to expect. I had never seen it.
And give some background. Like, for me, I didn't know Jack Hill direct. He's a famous director
of
black
exploitation. Yeah, he made a lot of exploitation movies,
very
including
low budget
some that I really love.
Exploitation films in the 60s for Roger Corman, and then he, of course... becomes very, very famous making these early blaxploitation films with Pamela
Greer.
Wow.
Pamela from The Office.
Pam Greer.
Yeah.
Like Foxy Brown and Coffee.
Yeah.
And Switchblade Sisters.
Yeah.
Which Patrick got a signed poster of.
Yeah,
and things like The Big Doll House.
Yes.
And The Big Bird Cage.
Describing all these awesome movies.
So yeah, it's like, I really didn't know this before when I walked in. So it's like, oh, he did, and I said, he does horror? And he said, I think he's done one or two.
Yeah, this was kind of early. And again, I didn't even know what it was about. I just figured, well, it's part of The Massacre. It must be horror.
Because I can't say it's really about Spider Baby.
It's not. It was like a crazy dark episode of like the Addams Family.
If they actually killed people.
Yeah, right.
And I think what one of the one of the things that the douchebag MC did say, which I thought was really good, was that the film was ahead of its time, considering that the distributor had money problems and didn't come out till 2 years later. When you think about when he made it, that was really not being done so much. And I'm watching Spider Baby, and I'm going back to the first podcast that I did with Patrick ever. We did the Wolfman remake, and I started by talking about Lon Chaney Jr., the lunkhead alcoholic, and here he is in Spider Baby at the end of his career.
It was his last movie? Was that the... Or close.
Jack Hill was sort of...
vague.
Well, because there's... He's sort of saying, this is the last movie before it gets really sad.
Okay.
But he had an alcohol problem. I think there's points in the film where you can sort of tell, because even Jack Hill said he was trying to be on the wagon, but he had an orange full of vodka.
And he said, like, I'm going to try really hard to be on the wagon, but he also said they shot the movie in 12 days.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
I mean, if you're an alcoholic, I guess, you know, that's a long time. But
I will say, the scene where he's talking to the girls about the promise he made their father, and he
the
tears
one where
up.
He's crying.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
It is.
Booze tears.
His whole performance was a lot of fun.
And he knows what movie he's in.
Yes.
And everyone in that movie brings it.
And
it was amazing how moving that scene was, though, in this really whacked out movie.
But then you have to remember that when Chaney started out, he was the original Lenny in Of Mice and Men on Broadway. And so I saw a lot of that,
sure.
That he had always been able to do that, even in the Wolfman films. What I thought was interesting, what Jack Hill was saying, that the two murderous sisters in Spider Baby, one of them was a child actress. She had been making movies forever, and the other one was brand new. She auditioned for this, and she got the part. And I thought the brunette walked away with the movie. I thought she was the whole movie.
Yeah, I would. I mean,
and the blonde was the child actress.
Yes, and I agree. I mean, I liked both of their performances. I liked the brunette better, and I think it's because she was inexperienced, and she taps into this weird thing that you can't fake.
And you don't know you're not supposed to be able to do.
Right.
In a movie.
Right. It's like the two kids in Moonrise Kingdom. If they tried to coach kids to do that,
right.
It would not work.
Very cute. And I said, Patrick, how come they're not naked? And he said, don't worry, Jack Hill makes up for it later in his career.
For the rest of his career, I think is what I said. And I don't remember the actor's name, and I'm very sorry. The guy who plays sort of the romantic lead of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I want to speak to that.
Good God, he crushed he made me laugh every time he talked.
Yeah.
And here's the weird behind-the-scenes thing, which guaranteed that I was watching the film very differently than the three of you. Two of the actors in the film later show up on the soap opera that my mother watched forever, since I was 4 or 5. And I'm watching the film, and it took me forever. I believe it was Days of Our Lives. And I'm watching the film, and it took me forever to figure it out. The actor you're talking about, yeah. Uncle Pete,
yes.
was on Days of Our Lives forever and was really great. I remember him being really great, but here was the big surprise. There was this...
Sid Haig.
No, not on Days of Our Lives. On Days of Our Lives, there was sort of an elderly woman. She was sort of a matriarch, and I just remember it was on every afternoon in my house growing up. That was the wife who tries on the lingerie.
For like a long time.
And I was like... Ooh, she was young once.
You guys missed something, too. I think you left for the part of the Q&A for Jack Hill. He had mentioned, and I feel bad, I'm paraphrasing and I'm getting some stuff wrong, but he had mentioned, he said, I want to point out that you're also watching some non-linear editing way before it was popular. When all these things are happening at the same time, mm-hmm. so I'm trying to cut, but you can't cut too much. And I'm like, I don't know if that's really nonlinear editing, but, you know, to his point, it was like, obviously
she wasn't actually in front of the mirror for 2 hours.
Right.
I choose to believe she was.
Right.
Spider Baby was great. It was one of my favorite movies of the massacre.
That was the happy surprise.
And definitely the happy surprise.
And the print looked great.
The type of movie that I think it's great to have one of the makers on hand for.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I mean, just because it is so odd and so offbeat. And
right. But still, like, plays so well in 2012 that you want to find out, like, how did this guy know to do this? That's what one of the things that I responded to in Uncle Pete's performance was his timing felt so much like 2012.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was, he was so funny.
Yeah. The two questions I would have asked Jack Hill were, one.
Can we hang out?
Yeah. Well, apparently he has good weed. That I wanted to ask him about if those two people were in fact in that soap opera, mm-hmm. although I'm 93% sure that they were. But the second thing I wanted to ask him was, hold on, I lost the thread.
Well, you missed a person asking him about the car. A person stood up and said, excuse me, I believe that's a 1920 blah, blah, blah Duesenberg. Am I correct? And Jack Hill's like, yes. He's like, well, I'm from Indianapolis where they make those cars. I swear to God, it became about him.
And this is why I flee the theater during the Q&A.
Here's
and then he asked how much it costs to rent the car.
But actually, Jack Hill's answer was interesting because it's $100, the same as it costs to rent an actor. Like, that's how much it costs to rent the car.
The second thing I wanted to ask Jack Hill is at the beginning of the film, we have this black actor who's delivering a letter. And it's Mantan Moreland, who had a career in Hollywood playing the perpetually scared servant.
Yeah.
Feats do your duty. And I wanted to ask Jack Hill if, in the mid-60s, was he using that trope?
Right.
Or was he commenting on that trope?
Right.
Because it's not clear. It's not clear. Was I out in the lobby? It doesn't seem as ugly as it is in those films that were made
in the 30s and 40s. Given his body of work to follow, I would believe that he's commenting on that trope.
That in the same way that the film comments on Lon Chaney, and that got a tremendous reaction when they're at the dinner table and she brings up the Wolfman and then Hill cuts to Chaney, that you get the feeling, because he does have a sense of film history, that he's doing it affectionately. Ladies and gentlemen, Mantan Moreland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After Spider Baby, time slows to a crawl, if I'm not mistaken.
No,
it's Return of the Living Dead. So we have two movies in a row.
And this is the peak.
The highlight.
And when he says the peak and the highlight, we're talking about 8 o'clock at night. 10 hours before it. No, my math is off.
They both
it's
have sort of a
more,
term.
I think.
16.
Yeah. 16 hours
a
before
arch,
it's over.
A little hip, you know.
Right, and I recognize you can't program only those movies. And again, you know, I think Rusty's maybe going to run into some problems because he's been doing this for so many years and he shows 12 to 13 movies every year. And so you start to run out of, like, the staples. And so he's already shown a lot of these kinds of movies and you don't want to necessarily repeat. So you end up with a lot of phantasms.
You know, I was thinking on the drive here after the massacre, I was thinking about, like, programming. Because I actually, you oftentimes program stuff for birthdays and for our own little things. And it's, you always do a great job, and I'm not blowing smoke, although I am, because you're great. But how hard is it,
Jack Hills?
How hard would it be to program something after, you know, doing it for 15 years? And, like, this is, like, you're going to eventually have to show Phantasm 2, I guess.
Right, exactly.
I think there's some other roads he needs to go down, though. And maybe I'm just speaking for the one person in the audience who's me. But when I started going to the massacre, one of the big highlights of it for me was I suddenly saw a whole bunch of Universal films that I had never seen in a theater ever. And he hasn't nearly plumbed all
of those. There's almost kind of a formula now, and I don't say that in a derogatory way, but we get a Universal, we get a
Silent
Price.
First.
Yeah, we get a Silent, we get a Universal, we get a Vincent Price. We usually kind of get a Hammer. We did not get an Italian
Thank
Zombie this
God.
Year. Thank God. We get some sort of bad slasher. The last movie is usually something kind of A-list. This year it was Halloween 2. Return of the Living Dead is a lot of fun. I don't know what else to say about it.
The other thing I liked, which I think I've always liked, but I never liked it as much as I liked it last night or 3 weeks ago, whenever it was. I believe the actor's name is James Caron.
Yeah.
The really scared medical supply company employee, he spent 20 years of his life on some soap opera somewhere.
Okay.
But he's very beloved by the monster community because he does cameos in all these, what is it, Dark and Stormy Night, and, where's my brain? He's a current filmmaker who does homages to older films. I like him a lot more than you do. Larry Blamire.
Okay.
All of his films. That James Caron is in two of those, sort of as a little tip of the hat. And I just thought his performance last night was a hoot. I just thought every second of it, how over the top it was, how scared he gets, was so funny.
I thought that movie had a great cast.
I think the movie's great and a lot of fun, and not fun ironically, although there are some things that hipsters can point to and say, oh, that's so great because it speaks to me, and it's like, oh, look at that zombie, it's commenting, blah, blah, blah. But it's also like, they knew what they were making.
Right.
I don't think there's a bad scene really in it. I think it's all pretty funny and good.
There's a couple really funny jokes. Spoiler alert, I have never seen a screening of Return of the Living Dead where Send More Cops doesn't get just the funniest reaction.
It's a good joke. I really like the trope that they never call attention to, that Freddy's girlfriend is hanging out with all these really tattooed and pierced and leathered up, like real 80s skinhead kind of punks. And then she's Sandra Dee in the middle. And they never draw attention to
it. I think part of that might be, though, if you look at the group in Suicide's car.
Yeah.
It's not, because there's those two that are kind of dressed kind of nice that sort of pair off. It's this weird...
Well, they're kind of a new wave thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very strange group of young people.
Yeah.
And then you have Linnea Quigley. My clothes come off almost.
I also liked how dark, I mean, it's kind of dark movie. You think it's going to have a better ending. Spoilers, it really doesn't.
Yeah, right.
And even like when it's at a point where they're like, oh, let's call the number on the side of the thing. They'll fix it. And it's like, for about maybe 3 minutes, you're like, this is happening. Even though like our heroes might have to die because of what the government chooses to do to contain this thing, it's like, well, that didn't work.
The first thing they is, why didn't you call sooner?
Right.
Could Rusty have done this on purpose? Wow. If you look at all the movies we watched.
I don't think he did it on purpose.
That's kind of a theme.
But it started to wear on me around Dead Snow.
The dark noir ending, specifically ending with an explosion. Black Cat ends, blows up the house.
Yeah.
Halloween 2. A lot of blowing up the house.
That's the horror, you know. I don't know how many.
Yeah, and that's part of it too. I think it's just because I was sitting there wondering. Because
somebody said you have to end a movie like a house on fire.
Are all these bleak endings getting to me because all these movies have bleak endings, or is this every horror movie and I just want a break where, like, hey, someone lives?
Your break happens November 1st, my friend.
Oh, Jesus. Dead Snow is when it really started to wear on me, but we'll get to that. Return of Living Dead was great. Linnea Quigley came out. She did Werewolf Bar Mitzvah. You're welcome.
She did a great Q&A, too.
At one point,
she kept her clothes on, which I was a little disappointed by.
And at one point, the guy asked her about, like, doing rape scenes, and was like, this isn't what we should be talking about. I want to crawl under my chair.
And lay in the beer-soaked grossness that is the Portage
Theater. This is the guy who emails Rusty every year after the massacre, and his email is... very short and to the point, more rape.
She handled it pretty gracefully, which made me actually think, though, oh my God, she gets this question all the time.
She does a lot of conventions, and I can only imagine the things she's
been asked. I asked her about, like, you had great chemistry with the guy who played Suicide. Talk to us about his untimely death. Like, can we keep it light? Can we talk about it?
Right, because this isn't like the actor's studio.
I thought I was here to have fun.
Yeah, right. Like, were you watching the movie? I was just...
The proper ending, I realize now, to this massacre would have been Rusty blowing up the Portage Theater.
So then we get to Phantasm 2?
Yes, and that's when things start to slide.
Yeah, it's. Ooh, I think I feel like a lot of people.
Did anyone like it?
I liked it more than Curse of the Werewolf.
That fascinating.
Because I felt like it was quicker. Honestly, that is the one criteria
too.
But I, at that point, I noticed the audience was falling. Everyone was falling asleep. It was like everyone kind of started to check out.
I can't remember the girl's name. I wanted to say, like, does it have anything to do with...
with alchemy?
Alchemy. I was going to call her Armistice.
Kimmy, for sure. No, you're thinking of Armistice, Hot Dog.
Always.
Oh, no.
No, I'm not.
That was a lie.
I was trying to come up with the word alchemy, and instead I came up with Armistice.
That was the call. That was the fake...
Oh, you're right. You're right.
It was Armistice,
Return of the Living Dead.
Hot Dog.
Yeah.
No, it was Archimedes, Rhubarb.
You're right.
Hot Dog was great.
It was Archimedes.
You're right. Okay.
I'll say this for Phantasm 2.
All right.
I'm a fan of Don Coscarelli.
As am I.
I think the films he makes deliver in that they're fun on a budget.
Okay.
And the only thing I think I like in Phantasm 2 is there are many scenes and sort of a cumulative effect that it's very much like a dream.
Well, that's the whole Phantasm series.
Right, that the film is operating under dream logic. But many films attempt that and botch it.
I think Phantasm 2, less than any of them, does that. I'm not really a fan of the series. I recognize it has a lot of fans.
People are doing call-outs and shout-outs to all these things that they knew, and I'm like,
these franchises, it has this devoted following. And I appreciate the fact that, like you, I like Don Coscarelli, and I like that he made this group of movies that aren't like any other horror movies. They are their own thing.
And one of his films is quite unsung. Hold on for it.
But Phantasm 2, you get into a situation where the first Phantasm comes out, makes a boatload of money for a very low budget, and then Universal says, we want to do the sequel. You have to recast the lead, so he casts James LeGros as the lead. You have to add a bunch more gore, so it's a lot more gory than any of the other Phantasm movies, and I think it does away with a lot... Honestly, the other three Phantasm movies are way more out there than Phantasm 2, because Phantasm 2 is just a lot of, like, we gotta go get that guy, grab the stuff, let's get our stuff, let's go get him, we gotta get our girl, grab the stuff.
Fantasm. Wait, the girl in the stuff.
My house. Grab the stuff.
Are any one of these people a robot?
I want to have sex with that girl. Grab the stuff. Girl, grab my stuff. Archimedes, grab my stuff.
Mike made a comment that
when you say the girl should grab his stuff, is that?
Mike talked about, Mike was there for almost all the podcasts. He had to leave, unfortunately. But
The Massacre.
The Massacre.
He's here for none of the podcasts.
I am, our brains are all
at this point,
jelly.
The Massacre, the podcast, the rest of his life is all in one amalgam of despair.
But he said he actually liked Phantasm 2 more than Phantasm 1, which I've never seen Phantasm 1, but
just watched it.
I can't get behind the sphere, Jen and I, because we heard all these people in the theater laughing and calling out things, so we were like, what is Phantasm? So we're calling the sphere the Phantasm.
Well, that's what I kept asking, this is what I was about to ask Patrick, does it have more Phantasm? Does Phantasm 1 have more Phantasm than Phantasm 2?
No. By more Phantasm, do you mean the ball in the head?
I don't know.
No, that's what I was thinking. Like, we at least
it's like the death blow.
Yeah.
It's like four or five phantasms.
Now with 20% more phantasms.
No, there was a phantasm that went in the guy's throat. There was a couple of phantasms that flew around the room. There's a bunch of phantasms.
There was the cool one in his hand.
There's basically one phantasm in the first phantasm.
Yeah.
And that's the weird thing. Is like, that's what the franchise is known for, this ball with the little spear on the end. It's usually in the movie once or twice. It always does the same thing, which is it sticks out and then it drills into your head and then stuff sprays out. It's always the same.
In this one, it was also a key.
True. And it was like crawling through people. So Phantasm 2.
In this movie, it was a key to a very bright white room.
Phantasm 2, unfortunately, maybe because of its placement, maybe because I'm just not a fan.
It was just
a waiting game. It was how much longer until this is over.
And then it was midnight, and I have a question for the three of you.
After all,
that's half.
That's only midnight.
By the way, that's less than half. That's six movies. There's still seven to go.
At one point, you said that, and like everyone in our area of the theater, oh!
I saw Patrick counting on his, he was counting on his leg with his fingers, and I'm thinking he might be doing a seven-word review. And he's like, oh no, we've got seven more movies. And I like,
yeah.
I
died.
I, a little bit, yeah.
I believe I heard the word less than half. But here's my question about.
I said more than a third.
You did?
Here's Glass my question full. About Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors. Because it sort of has a rep, kind of, but is it only because Nightmare on Elm Street 2? Is real crap.
This is what I started to...
And this was them trying to salvage the franchise.
This is what... And I won't talk too much about Nightmare on Elm Street 3 right now. I just watched the first one and I rewatched the second one. And yeah, 3 is always pointed to as the best of the sequels. And this was the first time I'd seen it in maybe 2 or 3 years. And I didn't love it. But yeah, I definitely think because the second one is so bad... And has no rules, and has no idea what to do with the world that was created in the first movie.
Don't say too much. There's a Nightmare on Elm Street podcast coming up.
That this one tries to get back into that world to try and reestablish some rules. And, I mean, I'll say it was a high point of the massacre because I'm a fan of the series, and because
it's quick.
Fairly quick. It's
delivers.
Pretty much always entertaining. It goes on a little bit at the end, like every horror movie. Like
I remember...
Different things happen.
Different things do happen. There's a skeleton.
I remember when it first came out, I remember two things when I went to see it. Neither of which I was impressed by, but that when I think back to Nightmare on Elm Street 3, I think this was really the beginning of stand-up comedian Freddy.
Absolutely.
That he has the quips.
Absolutely.
And also that interminable monologue by the nun... Where they talk about, it reminded me of Patton Oswalt's routine about Darth Vader. Would you like to see Darth Vader as a little boy? Do you want to see how Freddy Krueger was conceived? Well, no, not so much now.
By but Amanda Krueger?
It climaxes, if you'll excuse the expression, with this famous line. And it's like Todd Aiken. You don't understand how fertilization occurs, do you?
He's the bastard son of 100 maniacs.
Which I always... In my mind, it was always the bastard son of 1,000 maniacs.
Just 100. Just 100.
Even more
bastards. I always thought it was 10,000 maniacs. We're talking about the same thing.
That's a Herschel Gordon Lewis film, and on last year's podcast...
That's what I was going to ban.
We discussed your love of Herschel Gordon Lewis.
Yeah.
Patrick called her Sister Exposition.
I did. the nun, Sister Exposition.
Yeah, very much.
Interesting that Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and Halloween 2 play on the same marathon, because I think... Both do for their respective franchises the same thing, which is set them down a very bad path.
Yes.
Well, does the other one have dream powers? Because that's what I like best.
You like the dream powers?
You like the wizard boy and like the chick with the
boy? Did that get a laugh?
The flippy girl.
It's ridiculous.
Patricia Arquette has a scream that would not stop. That movie is one long scream, by the way, too.
And yet, screaming was not her dream power.
Well, that's her regular
part. It was
in my dreams. I'm beautiful and bad.
Oh,
I thought,
poor Michelle Rubin. There's no way to deliver that line,
at
all. All right, so we'll move past Dream Warriors because I will have more to say on it at a later date.
And now we get to Houssou, which is the film I was most looking forward to because I had never seen it.
And as much as I want to say, there's no right time for Houssou.
No, there's no
this
wrong
was probably
time
the right time.
What time was it? Like 2:30?
It was about 2, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Almost exactly. And I had read about it. I have purchased the Criterion Blu-ray, but hadn't watched it.
Mark Ahn wrote a column about it at fthismovie.net.
Because the minute it was announced for The Massacre, I said, I'll wait and I'll watch it in an audience. And maybe because it was 2 o'clock in the morning, I watched about 20 minutes of it and kind of saw what the stylization was and then fell asleep.
I kind of think if the movie had played at 5, that the audience would
have... PM or AM? You got to clarify.
PM, PM. Okay, sorry, seriously. PM. I think the audience would have stuck with it and would have laughed ironically, although it's not actually ironically because the movie knows it's being funny. But I think a lot of the audience might have thought it was ironic laughter because this is foreign and they don't know what they're saying is funny. I think they might have stuck with it.
Right.
I think at 2 in the morning they turned on it pretty quickly.
I found the style of the film, as much as I can admire it, because, boy, you filmed a lot of little pieces.
And it never stops. It's not like, oh, they do this for 20 minutes and then it kind of settles in. It never stops.
I found that exhausting.
It is.
It's further exhausting because the movie is 4 days long. I mean, it's again, the theme for me at least was like all these movies, I take away a lot of good things. I'm glad I saw everything, honestly. Yeah. Like, I'm glad I saw everything, even Curse of the Werewolf. But it's like, this is so, like, I probably liked House to... from what I'm gathering, more than anyone else at the table. Like, I really liked it.
I like it for what it is.
I really liked it.
Did you?
Yeah. Because it was so goofy.
Was that sarcasm?
And I... No.
My jelly brain
all tired.
I think she liked it the best because she was the most awake.
Because
maybe.
I spent the most time in a Japanese school. But maybe that's...
Because she doesn't sleep because she's a vampire. Doug was talking about how long it was. So are you saying it's a 4-story house?
Oh,
God.
It was funny. Before The Massacre, just like you, JB, I was thinking to myself, this is the movie at 2 o'clock in the morning that is going to be insane. Yeah. And like, I am in a dream world that like...
And like, you can go one of two ways. Like, I'm with this or I'm going to shut down.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to
I
reject
thought
this.
This shows that it's not too late for me, that there's still a glimmer of hope. I thought it would re-energize me. Instead, it sent me home.
You know that expression, like, if you think you're going insane, you're not going insane?
Because you're aware.
Right, because you're aware of it. Before this, I'm kind of like, I can't wait for this to just flood over me and wash over me and, like, how it affects me. And actually, I was satisfied with how it kind of, like, hit me. And I'm like, this is batshit crazy. And I'm, like, just sitting back. And to your point, Patrick, you said to me before, too, because it's also Japanese, it's subtitled in English, it's in Japanese, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you can't read that fast or your mind starts to turn to mush. And you kind of tune out, and it happened a dozen times, but I was still just like, the circus of it was, I liked it.
There's no other movie like it.
That's absolutely...
I woke up when the piano player loses her fingers, and then promptly fell back asleep.
Which, I mean, that's one of those moments where you wake up and you're like, what the fuck am I watching? And then you just go back to sleep.
And then they had the fingers playing the piano by themselves. Which...
And they were playing the right... I was watching the notes and they were playing the right thing to match the music.
The music I actually loved all the way through. And it was very repetitive. It was like 2 or 3 songs. But every once in a while, there'd be like a really long pop song. The whole thing would play to this montage.
Yeah.
But the song was always great.
It was like,
a lot of times it was like an American song.
Doing that thing you do.
Think about this. All my only dreams. How Sue had dismembered fingers playing the right notes, something that they couldn't get Boris Karloff to do when he was playing the piano. Did you see that?
I didn't notice it, no.
Boris, just touch the keys.
Just
we'll tilt up almost instantly.
We'll flap it.
I was Frankenstein.
He's flapping at the keys, and suddenly we hear Toccata, Fugue, and D minor. And I'm sitting there thinking, how many movies have used this damn song? Rollerball uses that song.
I'm flapping the keys.
I love Carlos.
Play the right note.
Yeah.
Or we'll all be flat.
That's my Goonies reference.
Who was your favorite Houseu chick?
of the one-dimensional...
Yeah, they were like Ninja Turtles or Spice Girls.
This is something
they
Patrick...
They were like both.
This is something Patrick always says about movies, where everyone can only be one thing.
Well, this is
how Sue codifies that.
I think deliberately,
and then
but,
names you that thing.
Yeah,
they were like the Seven Dwarfs.
Nightmare on Elm Street. Not to go back to that. That's where that started too. I'm the drug girl, so that's how I'm going to die. I'm the nerd, so I'm going to die playing D&D.
I'm the puppeteer, so I'll go first. Because no one has any patience for that shit. Puppets, really? You're going to do puppets?
That was one of those things, though, because I grew up in the 80s. I had friends who saw that movie before me, and so they would describe that scene
to
me.
They'd just do this. They'd walk around.
They would talk to me at lunchtime, like, and he cuts open his arms, and he pulls out the tendons, and he's using them as strings, and I was very scared to see that, and it's still kind of disturbing. Yeah.
I almost shouted in the theater, but I refrained from doing that because I don't like when other people... No. Oh. I almost shouted in the theater, he's Marion Nutty.
Mine was better.
I missed both of what you said.
Who was your favorite Houseu?
Well, Gorgeous.
Okay,
and,
sure.
Mac, the comic relief, and Melody.
Mac was kind of the Mindy from, not Mindy, the Natalie from Facts of Life.
But yeah, they kept calling her fat because she was the foodie. She was like stick thin. No, and because all Asian chicks had boy bodies that like, oh, she has hips, so like she's the fat chick.
If I can interject, Jan made the funniest joke.
Kung Fu.
Mine was Kung Fu.
Kung Fu, yeah.
During,
probably because she wore the shorts.
During Halloween 2.
She wore those shorts.
During Halloween 2, the fantastically... useless security guard is named Mr. Garrett. And during that, Jan made a Facts of Life joke. Nice. Mr. Garrett, how's Tootie?
That would have been my favorite part of that movie. So Houseu ends.
My favorite was the black chick. I like the black chick in Houseu. Go on.
It ends, and that's really the movie that kind of separates the men from the boys. I think some people ran screaming up the aisles, like, I've had enough of this!
Yeah,
and the rest of us...
Which was me. I went home.
Couldn't move, basically. It wasn't that we didn't want to. It was just, I'm sewn to my chair.
I went home and took a nap,
yeah,
as I do every year.
So that was... Again, the movie has a lot of energy and color and... music, but it's still exhausting.
Yeah, it does go.
It's because of that.
It does.
And there's no like real linear narrative, so it's like, I have nothing to grab onto. And then...
It's a poem.
Next is Nightmares?
Andalou.
Nightmares?
Is that Nightmares next?
Nightmares.
I think so. Nightmares was one of two movies that I had never seen at this massacre. It was Nightmares and Frenzy were the two that I had never seen. I like anthology movies. I like 80s horror movies.
Yeah.
I did not like Nightmares.
Have you ever seen Nightmares before?
No, I just said it was one of the two.
Nightmares, I was distracted.
I understand. You're still thinking about Houseu.
Brown Sugar Spice is my favorite.
I don't know what to say except that I wasn't a fan.
I know you're a big fan of Creepshow. Creepshow 2 you like more. just kidding. Trick or Treat you like?
I do.
You like anthologies. And this one is a bad anthology. The villains and the things, it's not creative.
Was there any segment of the anthology that you at least liked?
I thought the first one was okay.
Yeah.
Which one was the first one? Honestly,
she goes out for cigarettes when she shouldn't because there's a killer on the loose.
That one was the most horror
themed
segment.
And because there is a sense of like when she is running out of gas and all the gas stations are closed, there is that sense of like, oh, what are you going to do?
It follows the...
You made a bad choice.
It's a horror movie. And then Larry with his cousin Daryl and his other cousin Daryl show up.
No, he's...
J.F. Sebastian.
Thank you. God, I could not come up with his name to save my life.
J.F. Sebastian.
The second one I liked... I liked enough because it's Emilio Estevez and he's playing
and
video
it's
games.
Video games,
and it's just fun and it's.
But it's so much of the time where it was like, oh, we wanted to capitalize on video games, but we didn't understand video games at all.
No.
Right.
The bishop. The bishop of battle.
Then the third one was
Lance Henriksen.
It was called the Benediction or something.
That nothing happens.
Though. That's the one. That's the first time I fell asleep.
Yeah,
and I fell asleep for maybe 10 minutes. And I missed how it ended, and you guys described it to me
It's boring for 12 minutes, like nothing happens, and then it turns into Duel for 12 minutes, where he's being chased by a black pickup truck.
Right.
Yeah.
Like there is one neat moment.
And it's not even like a badass, I mean, it's a big truck, but there's nothing particularly badass about
it. It's just, you can't see the driver, and he stops it by throwing something at it.
Yeah.
There is one kind of neat moment, not to spoil it, where he thinks it's gone, and he sees the ground starting to rumble.
Yeah, yeah.
And the pickup truck comes out from under the ground.
But
that's what I missed.
I wanted it to do more of that. If you're going to make your monster a truck, have it do some crazy crap.
Right. Like, I've never seen a truck do. I can't get away from this truck.
Like, stuff growing out of it, and consumes you.
When it hits rocky terrain, claws come out of the wheels so that it can climb rocky terrain.
It unfolds into a robot.
Nice, yes.
So I fell asleep for the end of that, and I woke up. I missed the first 5 minutes of the next one, so I'm like, I don't know where I am.
And yet, the last story is Richard Mazur and Veronica Cartwright. Veronica Cartwright. Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Arguing for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It's long.
About a rat problem.
It's like an ABC special episode of Family or something. Right.
And it's the happening where it's this, it's this, it's this. And then the reveal is,
yeah,
it's this.
Yeah,
and they build you up to this giant rat. And if I would have felt better and been more awake, I would have laughed a lot harder at the giant rat because it's...
I heard you laughing.
It's the worst thing you've
well,
ever
I
seen.
Well, I think giant yeah. is a gross exaggeration of what they come up with.
But it's still, they just filmed a regular rat in front of a blue screen. And then...
By the way, I don't think it was a rat. It was like a mouse.
Maybe.
It was like just a yeah. mouse on a bed. It looked like a dog. And then they did a bad rat puppet oh. face that was like shrieking.
Right. And then...
Yeah.
Spoilers for the final story in Nightmares coming up. Nightmares felt like it was made for TV, except for those stabbings
oh,
at the beginning.
I'm sorry. I thought yeah. you knew.
It was?
First of all, you're making me very happy I went home.
Oh, God.
And
good.
Two,
nothing.
It was made for TV.
Okay.
Oh,
someone decided
go.
It was too intense, and they released it theatrically.
There's these
that
stabbings at the beginning of the movie that have nothing to do with anything, and it seems like they shot that just to put it out into theaters to give it an R, because everything else
you're probably right.
is 100% tame. Wow. Well, that I feel better.
A lot. Because how do they... Now that they've introduced and promised you this giant rat,
and here
tell
it is.
Everybody it's, how they dispatch the giant rat.
The rat wants its kid back, like homeless dad. I just want my kids back. So they give it the kid back, and then the rat leaves. Oh, the terror!
Yeah,
the terror of the rat who gets its way and leaves us alone.
At this point,
I got what I came for. I bid you adieu. I'm a rat.
I bid you rat do.
I think you're woefully underestimating how scary a dysfunctional rat family can be. Quite honestly, of course, I was at home asleep.
And now, oh, go ahead.
No. I have nothing more to say about
what's
the rat.
After Nightmares? Oh, fucking Prince of Darkness, right?
Yes. When is the is there any bad time to show Prince of Darkness? Yes, it turns out there is.
At this point, the entire theater was asleep,
yeah.
and a lot of people had left. And I think some people were planning to come back, but a lot had left. And it was gamey. I walked up the aisles to go to the bathroom at one point. As Patrick pointed out in previous years, it looked like the Superdome after Katrina.
Yeah.
Just people are huddled and shaking. I moved from my seat to your seat, John, for that, because I needed to like just
Red
stretch
cross
my legs. Because
yeah.
I'm like, I don't know how to sit in these uncomfortable theater seats. And I dozed off for I feel like I fell asleep for 30-second increments the entire movie. Like, I wake up for a minute, fall asleep for 30 seconds.
You'd be like, wait, they're still playing.
Yeah. The guy is still hiding behind the boiler. And the guy is still looking at himself in the mirror.
The devil is still a green liquid. I had never noticed a smell before in the past when I would leave the theater and come back.
A little gamey.
It was quite the gamey
Yikes.
Smell.
Yikes.
Half of it was stale beer. I cannot identify the other half.
It was like breath
and
feet.
Just
feet.
Homeless
feet.
Guy.
Honestly, it was just a foot smell. But here's, and I
that green liquid that's evil.
You guys were talking about, I'm sure you've talked about this on the past few Massacre podcasts, but for me, at this point, I was eating healthy. I didn't have any candy. I was drinking water, but my body was shutting down, and I got so cold.
This happened to me my first year, I was telling you.
The first time I
stayed 24 hours,
I'm
this exact same thing. I got cold and nauseous.
A hoodie and a fleece. I put my gloves on. I put my hood over me.
Awful.
I put a pillow on me. I'm shaking. I start to doze off. I wake up feeling queasy, like I'm gonna throw up, like you know that sweat all of a sudden, and I'm like, no, I'm not. There's nothing that's gonna make me throw up. I should probably just wake back up, which I did.
Before the massacre began, I got there early, although nicely not as early as I used to get there for the music box thing, and I discovered that the first person in line is a former student and someone who's been leaving a lot of 7-word reviews.
Nice.
So
Yay.
he's a long time listener, Mike P.
Nice.
Way to go. Nice to see you. And at one point, we're waiting in this line because it never opens on time. And we were talking about exactly what you two were just talking about. And we were trying to come up with a name for it.
Okay.
Because everyone's felt it.
I should call it the Fulci because that's always when it hits me.
Mike in line yesterday suggested that you call it the feeling.
The massacre shakes. I kind of like Prince of Darkness. It took me a few viewings to kind of warm up to it. It was hard to watch at 5 a.m.
How about the MTs, the Massacre Tremens?
After seeing so many kind of slowly paced movies. And I picked up on something, I won't spend too much time talking about Prince of Darkness, but the movie that I kept thinking of during Prince of Darkness today was Dogma. Stay with me.
Oh.
Dogma has, Kevin Smith has all these ideas about religion and missing sections of the Bible and weird loopholes in Catholic theology. But he has no way to dramatize those ideas. So the movie ends up being a bunch of different characters explaining those ideas to each other because he wants to get them out, but there's no way to do it without just, I'll say this, and then you say this. Prince of Darkness is the same thing.
Patrick, you're brilliant.
And you have the skeptic.
Right. They're trying to...
You should start a podcast.
Turn
I would totally
this
listen.
Supernatural or theological thing into science. And it's a neat idea, but it just is a lot of people explaining things to each other until the last 20 minutes when it turns into a monster movie.
Do you think that part of the issue is that Carpenter didn't write it? Like, he directed it.
He did write it.
Yeah. Oh, I thought someone else wrote it.
No, he wrote it. It's something Quatermass. It's credited Marvin Martin Quatermass. That's John Carpenter.
Yes, because everyone gets the joke. Speaking of inside jokes, I never put together that the sheriff in Halloween is named Lee Brackett.
Neither did I until I saw it in the credits.
A nice little shout-out to the woman who co-wrote Empire Strikes Back. I once said this should go on the glossary. You, of course, are humble and disagreed that it should. Folks, we've just experienced the Bromley moment when Patrick gives this insight. Well, I was going to say it's either the feeling or the Bromley moment when you give us pause because we're thinking about what you said.
One ambitious flawed movie to another. after Prince of Darkness, they come over the microphone and the three of us are still there and we're all very tired. And the guy gets on the microphone and says, next is going to be Frenzy and then Halloween 2. And we all kind of perk up because we're running about an hour behind and we say, are they just going to skip Dead Snow? That's great. And we all get excited. And then some guy behind us goes, what about Dead Snow? And we all kind of snapped at him. We're like, no, just forget it. It's not that good.
That wasn't the first time someone made a mistake announcing what the next film was going to be.
It happened a lot,
Do they, I don't know how the logistics of it work in the projection room, but is it all like lined up? Like we've got the trailers between these things. We've got this movie. Because they don't stray from that script at all. Like nothing, even at the end, they played a long music video.
Yeah, we're running
Halloween
over an hour
2.
Behind. It's like, no, just skip the video, guys. Let's get to the movie. And in fact, just show half the movie. That's fine.
That's fine.
Let me get your guys' reaction. I had seen Dead Snow before. So let me get your reactions to Dead Snow.
I like zombie movies because zombies is one of the things I'm most scared of in real life.
Okay.
And so there were some things I liked about it.
All right.
I liked a lot more of what I think you disliked in terms of like the douchey archetype teenage college kid, not teenage, but they're like college kids in Norway, I think.
Yeah.
Sounds right.
So these
very
Norwegian
cool. I was miserable just Norway. Watching them.
Medical students are like, and they fit the stereotypes, and it's a very like indie kind of hip movie. They're very, it's self-aware of like the movies that it references.
Right, this
and
guy's the
stuff.
Movie fan, so
he keeps
talking about movies.
But I thought their dialogue, from what I gathered, like their chemistry was good together. Again, it's hard to kind of separate that because you're reading what they're saying and you're hearing this very flurgen, blurgen, bergen, flurgen language that makes no sense. And I thought German was ugly. Good gravy. This language is weird. But then, and I even like the concept of Nazi zombies.
Zombies?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's where the whole thing starts. Like,
I like that somebody thinks, like, wouldn't it be cool to have zombie Nazis?
Yeah.
Zombies.
And then it goes off the rails because it's just, like, it's just this kind of, I think, a bad design kind of, too, for the Nazis.
Well, it goes on and on and on and on. But Dead Snow is the part where was the movie where that whole sort of nihilism of the day really set in on me because, and I don't want to spoil too much of Dead Snow. I think it's a fine zombie movie. I think if you're a zombie fan, it gives you a lot of the things that you want out of a zombie movie, which is, you know, zombies and tons of practical gore effects.
Also, if you're a Nazi hater.
Oh, yeah. Which we all are. That's
sure.
Right?
Well, not me, but that's another podcast.
But he does hate zombies.
I just felt like it takes a long time to get going, and then once it gets going, it really gets going. So that's great. And then it actually keeps going and probably needs to wrap up earlier than
it does. Once again, it follows the same thing. It just goes on too long.
But I just felt like there's a long stretch where
Yes.
We're supposed to be, I guess we're supposed to be rooting for the zombies? Like, that.
No. Why?
What? I think at a certain point it does turn, and okay, yay, we want our guys to survive. I have to spoil Dead Snow. If you haven't seen Dead Snow, you can skip to the end of the podcast when I complain about Halloween 2 for a minute. Because the characters are basically sort of interchangeable fodder, and we know that they exist only to be killed, and at a certain point it becomes clear to us that none of them are going to survive, and so all we're doing is sitting and waiting for the zombie to kill them in some elaborate way. And that got to me. Like, this is depressing. I don't want to root for the zombies. I want to root for the survival of these
characters. You want to like the characters more, too.
But you're making it impossible because right. You're just telegraphing that it's hopeless. They're all going to die horribly. And sometimes that works, like in Night of the Living Dead. It's making a political statement, and that's a really grim, dark movie. Dead Snow tries to have it both ways, where, like, it's kind of silly and over the top in that sort of dead alive way, but then there's things that are really mean-spirited, and I won't say specifically what, but it involves a guy and his girlfriend, and it's really unnecessary.
It's horrible. And it goes on for a long time. After it happens, it's like, oh, this is horrible. Like,
it doesn't fit in the silly movie
no.
that Dead Snow sometimes is.
And maybe I'm reading way too much into Dead Snow,
okay. But
I think there might be a political context to Dead Snow that we don't get because we are not Norwegian.
Sure.
Because the Nazis occupied Norway.
Sure.
And I think there's a lot of...
Let me put it even... I think Patrick's racist against Norwegians. You hate Norwegians.
I'm just realizing
this
now. I
think he's racist against zombies.
I just got depressed because I felt weren't supposed to be rude. And I get depressed anytime a movie... And it happens a lot in horror movies. Just like, don't bother. There's no chance. No one's going
to
survive.
But at least Return of the Living Dead, it's like a little more fun. The journey is more fun.
Yeah.
Actually, now that you mention it, in Dead Snow, the Zomzies just want their Zomzy baby back. Like
the Which is pretty much, gold. Yeah, exactly. They have a thing that's been taken and they want it back. And
it's Pirates of the Caribbean, right? The first Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Like, we have to get our gold back, our Nazi gold.
Right, that we pillaged from the Jews.
Yeah.
I was in a bar one night with Patrick. And he went on for about an hour.
That never happened.
About black zombies.
Then Frenzy.
Frenzy.
Which would have been great had it started at like...
Which are zombie friends.
Had it started at like 7 a.m. in that sort of sentinel psycho spot.
Yeah.
Perfect. Great.
And at this point, I waltz back into the theater, fresh as a daisy, and I'm really thunderstruck by the stick.
Doug is like huddled over.
Oh my God. At one point, Jamie...
By the way, at least... 2 hours of Frenzy had already gone on before you got back.
Yes.
And you still saw 2 hours of Frenzy.
For real, though, that movie is it's over 2 hours, right?
It has.
Again, did it just feel like it because we were so tired? Because I liked the movie.
I got to check it.
I was on board for all of it.
I came back about halfway through Frenzy, and I knew something was wrong because both Doug and Jan were wearing their hoods. And it was like, did I miss... You had a religious conversion of some sort?
At one point, Jan leaned over. I was leaning on my two pillows, and I was hunched over, and I was scratching my head. I didn't know where I was, and Jan's like, are you okay? And I'm like, well, yeah, but no. You know, like, of course I'm not okay. Like, I'm here.
You were both wearing your hoods, and Jan whispered, we're not doing a podcast on this massacre. We're doing illuminated manuscripts.
Yes.
I like
1 hour 56 minutes.
I mean, that's insane because it felt like 2.5.
I think I got back about an hour in. It seemed to me that's the way it felt, and I haven't seen Frenzy in a dog's age. And maybe because I missed the first hour, and maybe because I took a little break, I am so impressed with some of the things that film does, and just that's really the last good Hitchcock movie.
Curse of the Werewolf, by the way, hour 31.
No way.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. I like Frenzy a lot. Again, that was the other movie I hadn't seen. It was a Hitchcock movie that I'd never seen. I really liked it. It's not exactly horror, but I think it fit in with the day. It just felt super long. And honestly, without spoiling specifics, there was a point in Frenzy that I really thought it was going to end.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
The crazy long tracking shot?
Right.
And down the steps.
Yeah.
And it's a different movie.
It's a very different movie, in fact.
But it's Hitchcock, and I'm like, of course.
It's the movie that would have felt... If it ended with a tracking shot, that's the movie that would have fit in better with the theme and the mood of the day.
Yes.
Oh, it's the 70s now. Everything's the worst. And Hitchcock can let him do this.
Yeah.
But you'll have to admit, it keeps going, perhaps too long. That movie's got a great last line.
What's the last line?
And even though half the people in the theater were asleep, it still played.
You're not wearing your tie?
Yes.
Yeah. It just, it was like, there were too many twists at a certain point. Like,
it also,
the whole sequence where he's trying to get the tie pin back is great.
Yeah, that's the...
That, yeah.
It's great.
That's the show stuff.
But then there's 15 endings after that still.
Well,
and he's guilty. He's not guilty.
A explanatory exposition towards the end, which...
Yes! And I liked the scenes with the cop and his wife. And
me too, actually.
They're very entertaining.
Yeah.
But it's also weirdly like, oh, they hate each other, and isn't this funny?
Well, I don't know if I was looking at the movie times on my phone just now, and I don't know if you said this, but it wants to be a bunch of different things. Like, that kind of movie, like, where it's silly, where the relationship between them is a completely different... It's more like the Harry movie. What's the Hitchcock? The Trouble with
Harry.
That's a funny...
Very much.
A very funny movie. But then it's got the very serious thing about, like, the girl who's murdered, and you're, like, rooting... Like, you want him to get his pin back. It's that weird flip the script type thing.
Right. The other
you can't
thing,
have it both ways. But
the other thing I liked about Frenzy was, and this happened to a lesser extent with Witchfinder General, whenever you see a film that's made in England, you never know who's going to show up. So Gene Marsh, who later gets really famous on Upstairs Downstairs, and who used to host a show on PBS called the Fantastic Animation Festival on Sunday night, she shows up in the little role, that dating service, where they turn him down because that woman... hair pulled back, a severe bun, glasses.
Oh, yeah.
The secretary.
Yeah.
And that's Gene Marsh. Sorry. But the better one was the police detective with the wife experimenting with cookery. The other guy in the office is the crazy shouting a police officer from Clockwork Orange. And his performance in Frenzy is so different.
Yeah.
In Witchfinder General, Wilford Bramble shows up in one scene, mugging to save his life. And it's like, ladies and gentlemen, Wilford Bramble.
Pine Tree Studios.
And it wasn't that many years after Hard Day's Night. But you're like, well, he's old in Hard Day's Night. And in this, it's in color, and he's got long hair, and he's mugging it up. Whenever you see a movie made in England, you just got to watch because the greatest people show up.
Yeah, I thought Frenzy was a lot of fun, but it was the wrong time and it was long.
Yeah, I mean it was. You know,
I'm also surprised, and again, I didn't really know much about it, but it's 70s, you said, and it's like Hitchcock is showing nudity, and that was shocking to me actually.
And that was the linchpin of the advertising campaign.
Lovely.
Right?
Because in a week, you guys are going to get the new Halloween CD. And it has the radio commercial for Frenzy. And that was
now,
like...
see Hitchcock with boobs.
I'm serious. That was the linchpin. The studio would like me to point out that this film is rated R. No one under 17 admitted. Booby part.
I'd like to see Hitchcock talk to Vincent Price about this.
I think it would sound a little something like this.
Alfred, I think boobs are excellent. Well, it's funny you should mention that, Vincent, because I talk very slow.
So after Frenzy...
Because I've had a stroke.
You know, we're all ready to be done, but we still have Halloween 2.
One more to go. And Halloween 2 is slowly, insidiously getting this reputation, which it doesn't deserve.
For being good.
It's being reappraised as, you know, it wasn't quite the shit pile we thought it was when it was released.
Okay, I have a weird relationship with Halloween 2 because for a couple of years that's been the reputation.
Halloween 2, and then it takes a few days for Halloween 2.
Well, for a
sequel,
it's good. It's the best of those sequels. Well, for this 80s now, it's the best. Okay, so people like Halloween 2. I rewatched it last year because Mike and I did a podcast on all the Halloween movies. I was like, I don't really like Halloween 2. Watching it today, it was insufferable how slow it was. And it goes back to a conversation that you and I have been having ongoing throughout Scary Movie Month, where we talk about trying to build tension and suspense and how important is that to you. And obviously, the first Halloween is a model of that. And this movie tries to do it, but because it's not succeeding, it's just... slow and laborious.
It's reminding you of its failure.
Right. It's just like, isn't this suspenseful? Well, no.
Especially
it's
when we, as the audience, know
every beat.
Right.
Right.
That's the whole thing. It's like, I want to be surprised. And like, obviously, with the original Halloween, you're not necessarily surprised now, but it's like, yeah, at the time, John, you point out all the time about how it was, it blew people's minds, you know?
The first one, yes.
And then, but now it's like, I don't know. It's just...
The weird thing to me, and I wanted to ask you three about it, as we were watching it, I was conscious, so I made a mental note. Like every horror sequel, you know, we could get by with up to 10 minutes of the original at the beginning to remind people.
Yeah.
What we see at the beginning of Halloween 2 from the end of the original Halloween is not only re-edited, which you could see there, but it's re-scored.
Really?
Yeah.
He has a new...
Because the insistent piano theme in Halloween 2 is faster and kind
electronic-y.
Of... Yeah.
A little more like layered, like he did two keys instead of just the one.
Because the original...
Those were severed fingers.
Nothing has ever matched the original. Nothing has ever matched the original. And it made me wonder, because Carpenter wrote this and produced it, he wrote the music. Why did he sign off on that?
Yeah.
But it's there's weird. Another guy credited, too, like with the assistance.
Was it so that all the music in the piece would be shittier than the first one and therefore be of a piece?
Maybe.
It's just a weird decision.
It's a weird to see Halloween, which sets the standard for every slasher movie, and then you see Halloween 2, which is just every shitty generic slasher movie that came out in the 80s, just gorier and with more nudity and... way slower. Way slower.
A lot of things kept happening twice.
Oh my god.
Because they have to kill off the people.
And then sometimes Jamie Lee Curtis can't move or talk, and sometimes she can run. But then in the next scene she also can't talk.
It kind of embodies all the things that like you hate about what the slasher film has become.
Yeah. My two favorite moments in Halloween 2, and by favorite moments I mean least favorite moments.
Massacre Brain.
Because it's a sequel and it has to do all these things fairly early on. They have Pleasance do a sort of Cliff's Notes version of that monologue from the first one that's just a masterpiece of scariness. And he's saying it even faster. It's like, look, I don't have time to explain, but I spent 15 years.
It was where he's talking to the cop and the reporters are around. And I made the joke that the reporter is watching. And she's like, damn, I wish I recorded this because that would be the evening news.
And I've always enjoyed the fact that As the sequels go on, they always get bloodier and bloodier. And I've always liked the fact that someone gets it in this one, slipping on a big pile of blood. I thought,
but he's not dead. He's still whatever.
I like that.
That started at 11 o'clock this morning.
Yeah,
it ended at 12:30-ish.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was exhausting.
The trailers on the start of the whole massacre started at 11:45. So we were going 25 hours.
And again, last year the last movie was From Dusk Till Dawn, and that's not a perfect movie.
But that was a terrific end.
Super entertaining, yeah. Like, oh, this is easy to get through. Halloween 2 was a drag to get through at the end. Way too long. So we'll do quick round robin. Doug, favorite, least favorite?
Favorite, tie between, what do we see again?
I forget. Let me go back and listen to the beginning.
Return of the Living Dead and Spider Baby. Least favorite was Curse of the Werewolf, followed closely by Phantasm 2.
J-Bones, favorite, least favorite?
Of the 100 movies that we just watched in the last 3 weeks, I think my favorite was probably a tie between The Black Cat and Curse of the Werewolf. Sorry. And my least favorite were...
So it literally peaked in the first 4 hours.
No, that was a big problem I had with this massacre. And I think my least favorite was all the sequels they showed.
Okay. Jan Bones.
Favorite would be Creepy Witch Killer with Vincent Price.
Oh, nice, yeah.
And least favorite is Puddle of Evil. What was that one?
Prince of Darkness?
Yeah.
Puddle of Evil.
That was your least, that was...
That was...
You liked that less than Phantasm 2? I mean, it's fine. It's
I did like Darkness that less than Phantasm.
That's the greatest alternate title I've ever heard.
Yeah, yeah.
You're the best, Jan. Bum, 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 bum.
Anyway, thank you guys all for listening, and thank you to everybody at the massacre. We had fun. We're exhausted.
Yay. Also, if you live in the Chicagoland area, I guess they're screening a very rare print this Thursday at the Portage of Extro, a film that has its fans, and on a double feature with the original Trick or Treat from the 80s.
Starring Mark Price, the movie where heavy metal is evil.
That's right. Now stay tuned for more scary movie month, everyone.
Mm-hmm.